I'd like to call the joint meeting of the Housing Policy, Finance, and Public Health and the Finance Division of Healthcare and Human Services together to get today. And we have a very important issue that we want to discuss. I want to thank Representative Huntley for bringing his committee together with mine. We both have some jurisdiction over the issue that's before us today, which is the situation at the Veterans Home. And we hope that we'll have time for everybody who wants to testify to testify. We have on the agenda speakers from the Veterans Home Board, from AFSCME Council 5, the Minnesota Nurses Association, residents, and also the Minnesota Council on Disability. If there's others who want to testify, please let us know, and you can make it known through one of the pages who are here. I just want to say we're very concerned about the situation at the Veterans Home, and we're interested today in hearing the perspective of everyone who has something at stake, and I hope we have all the stakeholders here in the room. Is that Huntley?
Just briefly, I want to welcome everybody to this meeting. We take this very seriously. It's very important to us, and but we're looking for solutions. And not so much to put blame on somebody else, but to find out what we can do in the future to make this a better facility.
Okay, so we're going to start with a brief presentation of the budget from the Veterans Home Board and then get into the report. So that will be just, hopefully the budget can take be a brief overview. And we'd really like to hear then about the recent report. Welcome to the committee, and if you will just indicate your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Charles Cox. I'm the Interim Executive Director of the Veterans Homes Board.
And I'm Doug Rickabaugh. I'm the Financial Management Director at the Board Office.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We're here to give a brief overview of our proposed budget for fiscal year 08-09. We had every intention of having a high-tech overhead presentation, but I misplaced the jump drive, so we're going to do it the old-fashioned way off the paper. So,
okay. I believe members should have that in their packet.
Give everybody a moment to find it.
Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing I'm going to do is read the mission of the Veterans Home. The mission of the Veterans Home Board is to oversee and guarantee high-quality health care for veterans and spouses in its care. And we take that mission very, very seriously, and we'll be speaking more about the quality care at the Veterans Home as a little bit later time. We have five homes that make up our agency. We have one in Minneapolis, which has 341 nursing care beds and 77 domiciliary beds. We have a home in Silver Bay that has 87 nursing home beds. We have a home in Laverne, Minnesota that has 85 nursing care beds. Fergus Falls, 85 nursing care beds. And we have a veterans home in Hastings that is a domiciliary or a board and care only, and that is licensed to care for 200 veterans. The funding for the Veterans Home is received from three different sources. We have the state appropriation that comes to us. We also collect a federal per diem for every resident day. And we also have the residents pay a maintenance fee for living there. So half of the budget comes from state appropriation, about a quarter of it from federal per diem, and a quarter from the pay of the residents. Interesting, the Minneapolis home was originally built for Civil War veterans. It's been around a long time, and it is a landmark in the city of Minneapolis. With the age of the buildings, we do need to keep going on the repair and betterment of the facilities and to make sure that we keep it a high standard of care facility.
Madam Chair, slide number four shows our general fund budget recommended by the governor. Our current base is $75,530,000. The governor is recommending $90,368,000 for a total increase of $14,838,000. This is composed of three change requests. First is a statewide compensation adjustment of $5,504,000, which includes health insurance increases, the 1% retirement increase that all state agencies are facing, step increases, and any potential contractual increases. The next request of $1,334,000 covers all our non-salary increases, which primarily are food, drugs, utilities, equipment, nursing supplies, that type of thing. And the third one is $8 million. That is a catch-up on our repair and betterments. The next slide just shows our major categories by all funds. As you can see, compensation is the largest, $57 million the first year and $60 million the second year. That covers 937 FTEs. Then we have all our non-salary costs, $14 million and then $15 million. And then again, we have the $4 million each year for repair and betterment. And then we have a few other funds, resident trust, that we do hold the funds for the resident and return them to them, and a few other miscellaneous funds. Next slide, as Chip was saying earlier, this shows our three primary revenue sources, plus a few others. But the number one there, the VA per diem, we have over $15 million each year received from them. Over $15 million each year for resident payments. We have a couple of smaller accounts that include canteen and gift funds and leases and resident funds. And then we have the third large one is the general fund appropriation of $44 million the first year and $46 million the second year. Slide seven, I think Chip was going to talk a little bit more about the repair and betterments here.
As I mentioned in the opening statements, Madam Chair, our facilities are aging. Our Minneapolis campus was built again for the Civil War veteran. It has gone through some remodeling through the years, but the newest building on that campus was built in 1980. The campus is in definite need of repair and betterment funds. Our Silver Bay home is a remodeled elementary school, which is approximately built in the 1950s. We have an older building that we need to maintain. As everybody knows, it costs a lot more to maintain older buildings than new buildings. Our Hastings campus was a state hospital built in the 1950s. Again, some remodeling has taken place at that facility, but we need to continue upgrading the systems, HVAC, electrical, and those types of systems. Our Laverne home is about a dozen years old. Seems like just yesterday we opened it, but it's about a dozen years old. It now needs maintenance, repair, and betterment because of its age. Our newest home in Fergus Falls is about 8 years old, and that's doing pretty well. Although, as you know, there's always a need for upgrades to the systems. We ask for repair and betterment funds in the amount of $8 million. It's been recommended by the governor, and that would be spent on these facilities to bring them up to desired levels of operation.
Madam Chair, on slide 8, this just shows our revenues. The red numbers there are showing our revenues have not kept pace with our recent cost increases. And it also points out our repair and betterment funds available have been non-existent for 4 years.
Mr. Rickenbaugh, when you say they've been non-existent, do you mean they haven't been in the budget?
They have not. Yeah, we have not had any funds allocated in our budget for repair and betterments for those 4 years.
And how does that compare to the sources of your revenue, the appropriations and so on? Is this a decision of the Veterans Home Board, or is this money that was coming designated for that purpose, or not coming designated for that purpose?
The history of the account is we received the initial, I believe, fiscal year 2001 was the first time we received an appropriation for repair and betterment, and it was a little over $1 million each year. Shortly thereafter, we ran into some financial situations, and those funds were designated in law for repair and betterment. The working with the governor's office, the next biennium, they rather than us asking for additional operating dollars, those funds were wrapped into the operating budget.
Representative Eastman, did you have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess I have a question to the testifiers. I think I served on the bonding committee, and as I recall, there was some significant bonding dollars that went for veterans' homes issues. Maybe you could talk about them, and were not some of those for building improvements?
Madam Chair.
Fox?
Yes, there was some substantial amounts of money that were received through the bonding bill, and there has been remodeling. I don't have the exact date of when Minneapolis was remodeled, and Hastings received some remodeling funds. And yes, that made some significant changes in the building in improvements, but we need to continue on with that process. That brought a lot of the homes up to a acceptable standard of repair and remodel.
Representative Eastland?
Are there any of those bonding requests that are still out there that have not been used yet?
Mr. Cox?
Madam Chair, they've all been used.
Madam Chair, we do have, to try to clarify, we do have projects. We have some bonding money that was appropriated for asset preservation. We have items here that don't qualify for asset preservation. They don't meet the standard, legal standard of being just for walls and roofs and exterior envelope, that type of thing. So this is to meet more of the inside, if we need to build a new nurse station or things like that.
Representative Volshager, and I do want to welcome Representative Volshager and the other members of the Veterans Division of the Agricultural Committee as well.
Thank you, Chair, members. I'm from outstate smaller towns, and our nursing homes are typically under 100 beds. And I have had nursing home administrators talk to me, and you know what, their number one issue is they just feel this Minneapolis home in particular is too large. And they can't get their arms around how you could run a facility that large. So, I mean, I'm getting input from administrators in my own district that they think perhaps this home should be, you know, split in half, or maybe it should be three homes. So if you could just help me on that, of just, you know, does the size of the home have any bearing on some of the difficulties that you've had?
Whichever one of you wants to answer that, and then I'm going to let you finish your presentation.
Okay, Madam Chair. It is a large facility, which makes it more complex to operate. It is manageable, but it does take the correct leadership, and it takes funding. It takes employees that are dedicated. It takes the support of many service organizations. It is a large facility, but it is manageable. I'm not sure if I guess the question you're asking, have we ever thought about splitting it down to a smaller size? That has not entered in yet. But it is a complex facility, that is correct, with many different levels of care. And does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get it from the horse's mouth.
I'm wondering, members, if we should let our witnesses finish their presentation, and then we can get to more questions. It seems like there's a lot of questions. If that's okay, Representative Trump, I know you had a question next. Can you go ahead and just complete your presentation, and then we'll open it up for questions?
Madam Chair, moving to slide 9 on our revenues, this just pointing out one of our large revenue sources, VA per diem. We have built in 3% estimated increase for the next 2 years for a total of $1,135,000 increase. Just to point out, we have the last 2 years, we did receive 6.8%. Before that, it was 2.7, and we've had a year where it was 0.7. So there is fluctuation in that built in to our budget. The next slide shows the resident payments. We've estimated 2% increase each year for a total of $606,000. That history there, again, it fluctuates. As recently as 2005, it went down 3.3. 2006, it went up 3.3. And this year, we're projecting it's going to go down 2.6. Mm-hmm. So, and then the next slide just sums up those two slides, adding those two built-in revenue increases. We're talking about $1,741,000 that we're counting on for funding from those revenues.
If we have compiled the list, if we do not receive the funding as recommended, then we'll have to do some elimination. One of our possible ways of meeting our budget if the increase is not given is a reduction in available beds in all the homes, reduce census, close one or more facilities, eliminate the admissions of spouses of veterans. We currently serve veterans and their spouses. The first two alternatives have minimal cost savings attached to them. Due to the reduction closing beds, has a minimum effect on the facilities. We have termination costs from employees. Reimbursement to the VA of funds received for construction if the facility constructed with VA funds is not used for its intended purpose. And the third alternative is just not acceptable. Our charge is to care for veterans and their spouses of Minnesota. The budget reductions necessary if we do not receive the governor's recommended appropriation for 8 and 09 would be a $3.8 million in salaries, $2.9 million in non-salary items, for a total of $6.8 million. Also, we'd lose the opportunity to repair our facilities if we did not receive the repair and betterment funds. It would amount to a reduction of the budget of $14.8 million. And that pretty much wraps our presentation. It's a brief presentation, and we will be happy to answer questions that the committee may have in regards to the budget.
Well, I think the committee probably has questions in regards to the budget, but also the report. And are you the two persons who can answer questions about the report that was sent to us from the Health Department?
Mr. Jeff Johnson, the chairman of the board, will join us when we're ready to talk about the Minneapolis home.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions on this budget, first of all, and then we will go to the Minneapolis home?
Okay, the first person was, I think, Representative Otremba, Eastland McNamara, Winston, and Erickson. So we got a list here we're compiling. So. Representative Otremba first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if this is exactly to the budget, but my understanding is there are a number of units within the nursing home. And I would just like to know if it's just one unit that is having the problem, or is it a general problem among the which comes to the money issue. I know you have a lot of units within the nursing home. My question is it just one unit that's having the problem, or is it parts of all of the units? Clarify that for me.
You may want to invite the chair of your board to join you at the table. I think we're going to be getting to that right away. There should be another chair.
Madam Chair, Jeff Johnson, Chairman of the Veterans Home Board.
Would you care to respond to Representative Otremba's question? Did you hear it?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I understand that there are several units in the nursing home, and my question is, and which I think is a money issue, is it, when I toured, I looked at a lot of units that seemed to be in pretty good shape. So is this a problem in one unit, or is this a problem within many units?
Mr. Johnson?
Just to ensure, Madam Chair, are we speaking about the repair and betterment funds here?
That, Madam Chair, that could be a piece of it, yes.
Okay. The repair and betterment funds in themselves are for all five facilities and different projects within them. If it's relating to the health survey in regards to the different floors or the different wards, that probably be better directed to Mr. Cox, as he works with that on a daily basis.
Madam Chair, the citations were spread throughout the facility. There is no one unit that would have more citations than others. So the answer to your question is no, it is not contained just to one unit.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We got the budget detail for the whole, for the whole the Veterans Board. I wonder if you could give us a breakout of the budgets for each of the individual facilities. There's five facilities. Could you give us the numbers of how that large number splits out among the five facilities?
Madam Chair, Representative, I have a sheet here that gives the operating budget breakdown by home, which covers 95% of the costs. For Minneapolis, the governor has recommended in 08, $33,941,000. In 09, $35,828,000. And that's in the skilled. The domiciliary for Minneapolis, $2,746,000 and $2,898,000. Hastings is $7,632,000 in 08 and $8,063,000 in 09. Silver Bay is $7,985,000 08. And $8,462,000 in 09. Laverne is $8,272,000 in 08 and $8,721,000 in 09. And then Fergus Falls is $8,043,000 and $8,524,000.
Madam Chair, could maybe we ask the page just to make copies of that information right there, that we could have a copy of that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I just want to again commend you and Chair Huntley. You have had some extremely important, timely hearings, specifically as a pertain to my own district, and I really appreciate that. So that folks know, Mr. Cox was the administrator, or probably currently still is, at the Hastings Veterans Home. And I want to tell folks a little bit about our Hastings Veterans Home, and it's my hope, Director Cox, that you will take what we have in Hastings and replicate it some way, somehow, in Minneapolis. Because, folks, I will tell you, we have a community that has rallied around this facility that is there to help hundreds of veterans that, unfortunately, are not doing real great today. And we have community workers. I'm sure, I don't know if Dave Horsch, Pete Mollick, or Steve Varian are union or not union. I would imagine some are in a union, some are not. They're all working in the same direction. We have pheasant dinners there in the fall. We have a venison feed in January. And a lot of the folks in the audience come there and rally around and take care of this facility. Mr. Cox, I want to ask you a number of questions, and you can just give short answers. How many citations has the Hastings Veterans Home? And first, I want to qualify. You and I did not talk on the way in. We did not talk recently. I'm trying to think. I saw you. You were supposed to present previously, and we said hello. But above and beyond that, have you and I talked in the last month about any of your new position in this job?
No, sir, we have not.
Okay. Mr. Cox, how many violations or citations have we had at the Hastings Veterans Home? I don't even know how long to ask back, but maybe you could qualify.
This current year, we had zero from the Health Department and zero from the Veterans Administration. About a year ago, we had one citation, I believe, from the Health Department. But in the last 5 years, I think we've had a total of one or two citations.
Okay. Mr. Cox, I'm actually going to cut it a lot shorter because there's a lot of people here that want to ask you a lot of questions. Please take your experience from Hastings. Bring the people together, whether the nurses that got legitimate concerns about how hard they're having to work and dealing with the problems they have with lifting heavy patients and that. Bring them together and realize we want to take care of these folks that have been like Representative Severson or my father that served our country, and unfortunately today they're not doing as well as many of the other ones like Representative Severson and my father, and we need to help them. We need to help them whether they're at the Hastings home or the Minneapolis home, and please bring those folks together like you've been able to do in Hastings and find solutions to this problem so that we can get it corrected.
I certainly will. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have been following this issue, of course, in the media, as everyone has, and I just have a little statement here and then a couple of just a question. As probably nearly everyone here, I've had family who served this country. My father served in the First War, my brother served in the Second War, and my aunt's only child died in the Korean War. And to me, if you serve your country ought to take care of you. So that's the first thing. And I'm sure everyone here probably agrees with that. I think this is probably going to be one of the more bipartisan committees that we'll be serving together on here today. But looking to the future and considering the age of these buildings and lack of funding, in my opinion, that has occurred over the last few years, we're facing also a large number of young men and women who are going to be coming back from the Middle East with all kinds of injuries and so. This is a long-term problem that we're looking at, and I hope that this committee and this legislature and this governor this time will get off the dime and move decisively on this issue. But I did hear from the Nurses Association when I was seeking endorsement from them the concerns they had about turnover in the nursing cadre and so, and I'd like to get a little update from you, if I could, on where they sit in relationship to pay and workload and all those kinds of things, because I know that in nursing, just as it is true in education, rapid turnover is not a good thing for any institution.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cox.
The Minneapolis home does experience a higher rate of turnover than our outstate homes.
In Laverne, working for the Minnesota Veterans Home there is a very good job, and there's very little competition. You get into the metro area, there's a lot of competitions for RNs, CNAs, LPNs, and such. The Veterans Home Minneapolis has about a 17% turnover in RNs on a yearly basis, which means that we need to fill those positions and keep those filled so we do not have high vacancy rates. LPNs are about 28% on an annual basis. Food service workers, 43% turnover. CNAs, almost 30% turnover. For the facility, we have about a 21% turnover per year. That does create many challenges for us to make sure that we can recruit, compete with private sector, and be competitive. And we're working very hard to do that. At one time, the state paid substantially higher than the private sector. As we all know, that is no longer true. So we compete in that pool of qualified professionals in the seven-county area. We compete very hard. And our struggle is to timely fill vacancies. And we're working very hard on that. And that's one of our keys to keep ahead of the curve. If 21 people are walking out of the facility for a certain reason, we need to make sure we have 21 people to move into their slots. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair, just a quick response. Now, look, I'm very pleased to see the governor has proposed an increase in revenue for this area. Considering this discussion, which is shocking, really, the turnover rates that you're having to deal with. You know, let's hit the rubber, hit the road here. How close will this budget? How close does this budget come to seriously dealing with this issue, so that you can be competitive again and get the very best possible people?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Cox,
the budget is going to be very favorable for us. Labor management contracts and the labor negotiations will determine how competitive we will be with the private sector. As you know, the state bargains collectively throughout the state. So if we can push to get additional compensation for our professional staff as well as even our CNAs, that would be an advantage to us. Our budget we're very pleased with. We think we can live within those guidelines very well. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Benson, I might note that we are going to be hearing from the Minnesota Nurses Association. I think there are four nurses who will be testifying. And so I'm going to call on the other members who have asked to speak, and then perhaps we should go ahead and hear from the witnesses who have come today to testify. So I've got Erickson, Anderson, Liebling, and Murphy. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cox, would you explain what accounts for the reduction in resident payments? In slide 10, it shows a decrease in 05 and then an increase in 06, and yet a decrease projected for 07. Could you explain what accounts for that?
Doug, can you do that?
Madam Chair, Representative, the resident payments are based on the resident's ability to pay, and it fluctuates. You may have several residents come in a row that can pay the full cost of care, and that helps our revenues, and then it can go the other direction. So there is fluctuation just based on the people that are there by happenstance. Also, over time, if residents are there longer, their assets can be spent down, and we could start losing that. But it does sometimes go up, and sometimes it goes down.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rickabau, is the resident payment from a pension or is it from raw income or from savings? Is it, or is it a combination thereof? I visited Minneapolis a few years ago. I talked to several veterans about this, but, you know, I have forgotten how a couple of them explained to me what their resident payment was based on.
Yeah. Madam Chair, resident, representative, the resident payments are based on all their incomes, no matter what the source is.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. you mentioned in your presentation that the governor is recommending $4 million for improvement betterments, and you say that that's going to reach your desired levels of operation. What were the requests in previous bienniums for repairs and betterments? Do you have the documentation on that, and why wasn't it given if there was a request made?
Mr. Rickwell?
Madam Chair, Representative, my memory, I do know for sure we, in our supplemental request that we presented last session, we did include funds for various purposes, and part of it was, I believe, $2 million that we asked for, but that was not recommended by the governor, and it was not included in our funding. Previous to that, I don't know that we formally got through the governor's recommendations in the past few years. Those were the multi-billion dollar deficits, and we actually, a lot of agencies received cuts. We were able to hold on to our funding at that point, so things were tight. And so that reflects in how big a numbers we're asking for at this time.
Madam Chair,
Anderson?
Were there requests for repair and betterments made, or were they just because of the tight budget at that time, were they not given to the governor?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Cox?
the recommendations were made from the facility, but because of the budget being tight, there was no money granted for R&B. There were tight budgets at that time. The facility did have lists of repair and betterment projects.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd just like to see a copy of those previous biennium requests, if I could get a copy of them. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Mr. Cox, I think maybe the whole committee, both all the committees here would like to see that, so if you can make that available, that would be very helpful.
Next person on the list is Representative Liebman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to go back to something that Representative McNamara raised before. He was talking about the difference between the Hastings home and the Minneapolis home. And I noticed on the slide presentation that we were given here, the Hastings home has 200 domiciliary beds, and the Minneapolis home has 341 nursing beds. And I wonder if you could expound a little bit on the difference between those types of beds and maybe the difference in, you know, the cost to maintain those beds, the difference in I assume there's a difference in the need for personnel, et cetera.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cox.
There is, skilled nursing care requires quite a bit more care. The residents are typically older, have a variety of illnesses, they're unable to care for themselves, and they come into our skilled nursing home. The board and care, which is the domiciliary in Hastings, and Minneapolis also has a small domiciliary or board and care, 77 beds. These residents typically are younger, more capable, tend to have more issues with mental illness, chemical dependency, some of the aging illnesses that come along. Typically they're about 55 years old, need less care, are more ambulatory, are able to get around better, need less supervision. It's a higher functioning group of people. Very much in need of 24-hour care, but not to the extent that a nursing care resident would require.
Thank you. Representative Lee. Thank you. That's very helpful. And also, could you just give us an idea of what the cost comparison would be? I know it's difficult because in different facilities, I'm sure there are different costs. But, you know, if you were to say how much does it cost to overall to maintain a resident in a skilled nursing bed as opposed to a domiciliary bed, I mean, is it like 2 to 1 or, you know, can you just give us an estimate there? Mr. Rickabaugh?
Madam Chair, Representative, roughly we're talking a skilled bed, $240 a day cost, and the domiciliary is about $100.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, first of all, thank you for being here and taking the time to answer our questions. It's an important issue, and I know you can tell we know that. And this is a question in line with the question that Representative Anderson was asking, but maybe just a little more general. So I'm wondering if you can share with me or with the committee, for the past two biennia, previous to this one, the request that came from the Minneapolis Vets Home, if there was a difference between that request and the governor's budget proposal and then the appropriation that was made. I'm trying to get a snapshot, if I can, of the history of the funding since 2004, and that information would be really helpful.
Doug, are you able to handle
it? Madam Chair, Representative, are you focusing on the repair and betterment or the entire request?
The entire request.
Okay. I'm sorry, I can't answer that off the top of my head, but I could get that information for you. The last two bienniums.
Madam Chair, I would be grateful for that. Thank you.
Okay. Members, what I'd like to do is allow us now to hear from the other witnesses who have come. And I do have a list of legislators who had questions, but if we could hear from them, we can make sure we have time for everyone and then also for all of your questions. So if that's okay, I'd like to go on, unless there's some final comments that either of you wanted to make right now. We'll call you back, I'm sure.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
My question is actually to that point, and I'll try to be brief. Thank you. I guess in follow-up with Representative Murphy's question and Representative Anderson, so you're telling me that you don't have off the top of your head what the requests or the money that was granted in the last two bienniums?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's what I'm saying. Right,
okay.
Now.
I guess I would think that you have those, I mean, like, as a...
If memory serves correctly, we didn't get anything in new funding in the last two bienniums except for last spring, where our request was about $12 million and we received about $6 million.
Follow up real quick, Madam Chair, thank you. Because then I'm just trying to figure out in my mind if you've had next to nothing the last two bienniums, and then I think the testimony was we have a favorable outlook with this $4 million request, and I know you may be bound by other things, you know, as far as your testimony, but I'm grateful that the nurses are here because I'm wondering if they'll have the same response, and I suspect that they probably won't. But I'm thinking $4 million isn't close enough. It isn't in the even ballpark of trying to address the needs that you may be having. So I look forward to the nurse's testimony to see if we can find a more accurate number to find solutions. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Johnson, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair, if I may, one thing that I think might be helpful is, as we talk about past bienniums, is that we really took a different approach this year as far as the budgeting process. The board has established a number of new committees. One of those, we actually have a finance committee that is very diligent and put the task to all our homes in regards to the needs. The other thing that was different this year is the board directed our group, okay, the state requires this for your budget. What are our true needs? Because we did hear both the House and the Senate side repeatedly, whether it's in formal committee or as individuals meeting in the hallway, if we don't know what you need, how can we give that to you? We listened, and we instructed our staff, put what the actual request is, the state formula, whatever, but then put the true needs of what you really feel we need for the next 2 years. The governor's recommended budget very much parallels what those true needs and the requests that we asked our staff to put together. So that was a part of the difference, and perhaps Doug, I mean, can get that other information, but there wasn't two columns in the past. It was, this is what the state's requesting, so we're going to be a good agency and do that. But we coupled that this year with, okay, but, and I think Mr. Cox addressed some of those issues, that if we don't receive close to that funding, unfortunately, we're just going to be straight up front and say, this is what's going to have to be done. None of us want to see that. So that may help answer some of the questions for the differences from, because this year we did as asked and are requesting what we need.
Thank you. Real quick, Madam Chair, thank you. I encourage you to aggressively seek the funding that you need to provide the services required. Thank you.
Members, we do need to hear from the other members, and if I think from the other witnesses will come, and I want just to honor that, and we'll get back. These folks are going to be back. There's several of you on the list. Ask me, Council 5. There's three of you on the list. Would you just come down as a panel and address us, please? Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you'll just introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Pat Ritchie, and I have Sean Berry and Sam Betty with me. I have been employed by the home for 18 years. I'm currently the resident benefit coordinator at the home. I've also had my father as a resident at the home. I'm very well aware of the veterans' issues. I am the chief steward for Local 744 of AFSCME Council 5. Our union of 350 workers includes LPNs, HSTs, human service technicians, who provide direct care to our veterans. We also represent housekeeping, food service, office support staff, and various trades at the facility. We're here today because we care deeply about serving the veterans who have served. You need to know that AFSCME members want and need to be a part of the solution in improving care at the veterans' homes. We're the frontline workers who face the challenges and understand the solutions. We see three glaring problems in providing quality care: too few staff with unmanageable workloads and mandated back-to-back shifts. We have a high turnover rate of 32% annually. And we'd also like, instead of just looking at the numbers of the turnover rate, we would like it to be looked at as to why the people are leaving. And we also have a revolving door of top managers with constantly changing procedures and a lack of communication in the procedures. To address all previous health department citations, AFSCME has offered numerous solutions. Unfortunately, the Veterans Home Board and administration have failed to act on these and other suggestions. One, include union workers in addressing the citations. Number two, allow time during shift changes so direct care workers can share resident information. Hold monthly unit meetings to address the health care needs of individual residents. Hire an instructor to help staff who speak English as a second language understand their training and responsibilities. Create a diversity committee supported by AFSCME staff. And participate in a healthy workplaces initiative to improve morale. AFSCME teamed up with health partners to make Regents Hospital a much healthier workplace where people resolve conflict and treat each other with respect. In summation, administrators must make us a part of the solution. I implore you to do three things to improve care for our veterans. First, make someone accountable for improving care. We need strong leaders who will empower the staff with the tools to help them succeed, and you will see positive results in the care given to our residents. Bring back good managers with proven work histories at the home who have been driven out by previous administration. Secondly, stop studying the problems and start investing in adequate staff. Reports sit on the shelf collecting dust and nothing changes. You'd see marked improvements today if the money wasted on ignored studies had been invested in adequate staffing. Any nursing home administrator will tell you that mistakes can be avoided if workers have enough time to do their job. In other words, we are asking for fiscal responsibility. And thirdly, make AFSCME the membership part of the solution. Let all of us who have been dedicated, who have worked diligently with our residents, take back ownership of our facility. Bring back some of our best employees and managers who should have never been driven away, and let us get back to work.
My name is Sean Berry. I'm an HST or nursing assistant at the home. I've worked at the Minneapolis home for the last 25 years. Let me start by saying that our veterans deserve better. The large number of citations and what they represent is unacceptable. The vets home has many long-term employees. Many have 10, 15, 20 years plus service. I know that Chip has been with the home for many years. The residents enjoy seeing familiar faces. Some would ask, why would you work at a place that seems to be in constant crisis? I'll tell you why. I believe in the mission of serving those who have served. How do we solve our problems? I say give us the resources that we need to do the job. Adding layers of administration does not solve the home's problems. It is the HSTs and nurses that deliver the hands-on care. If you increase the number of HSTs and nurses on each unit to previous levels and with proper supervision, the problems should disappear. Mandation or forced overtime of 16 hours is an archaic practice that needs to stop. It is unsafe and demoralizing and has led to the exodus of highly qualified aides and nurses. The Minneapolis campus has one of the most diverse workforces in the state. The home could not function without the hard work that our immigrants workers do each day. In closing, our veterans have made great sacrifices for their country. Now they need our help. Let us work together to rededicate and refocus our best efforts to give them the quality of care that they deserve.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Samuel Berry. I work at Veterans Home as a HST on the PM shift. I got 4 points here to make that help to solve the problem at the Veterans Home. One, leadership. Two, accountability. Three, communication. The least but not the last, staffing.
Thank you. Other questions for the witnesses from committee members? Representative Easton, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I assume we're talking now about the Minneapolis home. Is that kind of where we've shifted to that?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I wonder if we could get some documentation of the overtime and back to back shift issue that we've heard about, so we kind of know how prevalent that is. Is there some way we could have some report on how much of that is actually occurring? That was my first question. If that's possible, it would be interesting if we can get that from either from the employees or the department or something. Anecdotal information is good, but it'd be nice to see the extent of it as it actually occurred. The other question that you mentioned about workload, and I guess I'm curious. How do we establish staffing ratios in the vet homes, and how do those staffing ratios compare
with other homes? Are they different in Hastings? Are they with a different kind of care? The private sector, I guess, where are we in that mix, and what kind of a staffing ratio do we have at the Minneapolis home?
Okay, to answer the question is, Madam Chairman, or Chairman, you can't really compare Hastings to the Minneapolis home. The Hastings facility is a board and care facility. Most of those residents are ambulatory. The Minneapolis Veterans Home is a nursing care unit. Many of the residents are in wheelchairs. Many of the members require lifts, Hoyer lifts, to get in and out of bed. How are the numbers decided? Currently, we've been running with about five aides for 50 patients. That means on a typical day, we're assigned 10 residents. We believe with the heavy caseloads that is an unacceptable ratio. A couple years ago, they ran the floors with 8 HSTs. Then they cut us down to 4. And, I think the ideal caseload would be 7 aides, which would be about 7 or 8 residents per aide.
Thank you. Representative Eastland?
I guess what I'm hearing you say is the number is determined rather subjectively.
Right. And then,
Okay. I get that. I was just curious. Do we know what the industry kind of recommends, or what is common across the industry? Maybe a comparison to Hastings is not a good comparison, but there are certainly nursing homes across the state that are similar in the kinds of care that they provide to the residents that reside there. Are there any kind of numbers that we could get that kind of give us an idea of what is common in the industry in terms of staffing?
Susan, I'm not sure if these questions are appropriate for these individuals here, but maybe is there a response?
Well, I would just like to say that I think it's rather, I don't know if the word I want to use is unfair, but I don't know that you're going to get an accurate reading comparing us to the nursing homes in the community, because most nursing homes are made up of women, and we have men, and a lot of times our residents are people who have behavioral problems, and sometimes other nursing homes won't take some of the residents that we will take. So I just don't think it's a good assessment to compare us with nursing homes in the community, because we are totally a different animal.
Representative Eastland?
Yeah, just another follow-up. I guess it would be interesting to see the comparison. I think we can understand that maybe it's not 100% comparable. But if DHS or somebody could get us that information, it would be helpful, I think. Then you made another question, or you made another comment about you think some of the problems that are occurring in you said something about we can study the problem. We can create reports, but the reports are on the shelf. What reports are you talking about that we maybe could find, dust off, and take a look at that exist that maybe haven't been considered?
Ms. Ritchie?
We have had the Wilder study come in. In the years that I have been there, we have had many different studies that have come, I'm sure. If you were to contact anybody in our administration department, you should be able to get them. In the past, I have asked what has happened to some of these reports, and I've been told that they're filed away somewhere in the administration department. But this has been a long-standing concern with many employees of the home regarding. We have spent time. We have had to have been pulled off of our units for a half hour, 45 minutes, to be interviewed by these people that have come in and asked questions about how we operate and what happens on a day-by-day basis. and we've never seen any results of it. So I guess that's a pretty good question about who they are, because we have not been shared the, had the information shared with us.
Okay. I want to move us along, Representative Eastland. We can come back, but we do have witnesses here. And I
just have one quick question. They don't have to answer this. It's just a question.
All right.
I guess if there is a report that has been done that has any relationship that looks at the Minneapolis vet homes and their operation as it compares to the private sector in the industry, maybe if somebody from the board could let me know that, and if that report exists, could we find out a little bit about it?
Thank you. That's a good idea. Representative Fitz, I think to this panel, did you have your hand?
Yes, I do. I would like, Madam Chair, thank you for testifying today. And I spent 42 years in the nursing home industry as an LPN, and my dad was a resident of the Minnesota Veterans Home about 15 years ago and passed away at the hospital. And so I have a vested interest here in a personal way, and also as a fellow worker. And I toured the home last week. We came over and asked the question of administration, and I want to ask the question of you on labor management. Do you have a labor management committee? I was told you do, and is it effective? And do you feel that, because you mentioned communication, and I feel a real lack of communication in a hostile environment. And that's where I think, you know, a good labor management process would be very helpful. So could you address that, please?
Sure. We do have a labor management meeting. Years ago, they had gone to quarterly.
Every other month.
And we just asked 2 months ago if we could please go back to a monthly meeting due to all of the things that are happening. Are they effective? We don't see results come out of them. It's been in labor management that we have asked and made suggestions and had different staff members come through and talk to management of the home, and we're pretty much told that we're in charge and this is how you're going to do it. So is it hostile? Yeah. In the nursing department, yeah.
Okay. We need to find a way to repair that.
And
thank you.
Can I just say one other thing?
Mr. Berry.
Is Madam Chair, the administration, you know, for a long time, they haven't accepted blame for any of the problems that exist. They tend to blame either the nurses or the aides, but they haven't always taken responsibility for their part in this problem.
Thank you very much, and just please hang around. We may ask you some more questions in the future. I want to go on, though, to the next panel of nurses.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and if you'll just introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, my name is Mary Jo George, and I am the Government Affairs Staff Specialist at the Minnesota Nurses Association. The MNA represents about 20,000 registered nurses in the state, including our nurses that work in state service in such areas as mental health, corrections, and, of course, at our veterans' home. Joining me in testifying today is our practice specialist, Carol Demert, and two of our nurses who work out at the vet's home, and I'll have them introduce themselves. We really appreciate the opportunity to testify. I think it's important that you guys have held this hearing because the House has not held hearings on the issues of quality of care concerns at the vet's home for the last 2 years. So we thought it was important to provide some historical perspective. We are very, very troubled by the quality of care problems at the vet's, and we believe they deserve better, but we are not surprised that this has happened again. We have been saying for the last few years in numerous Senate committees that we really believe the quality of care problems are a result in part to a nurse staffing crisis. We believe that if you look at the deficiencies, you will see that many of them are related to nursing quality indicators. We believe many of the changes have to be systemic, and unfortunately, we don't always see eye to eye with the Vets Board on this. I think we may be making progress as of today because we had a meeting with them yesterday, and I think it went more positive than we've seen in the past. But it was one of our nurses who called the Department of Health in 2005, which prompted the first investigation. We believe these problems have been cumulative, and we can point back to in the year 2002, there were some significant cuts made to the nurse staffing model. We saw that we eliminated a number of nursing aides, as you heard from the AFSCME representative, and they cut what we thought was a very critical positions, and that was 9 registered nurses who acted as charge nurses on the floor, who could coordinate the care and monitor the care, and our members will speak more to that. Once we had a reduction in staffing, we saw that management did rely on the use of mandatory overtime to the point where we were having our nurses working 16-hour shifts, sometimes twice or three times a week. Clearly, nurses do not exercise good judgment in this environment. We had 27 nurses leave, these are licensed nurses, in the fall of 2005. We do have a bill separately that is moving forward this year on mandatory overtime, and it doesn't prohibit it completely, but it does allow a nurse to refuse to do overtime if she or he does not feel safe. Because what's happened out at the vet's home is that our nurses have been disciplined for not accepting an overtime shift. So clearly we're seeing a negative work environment, and it's not real possible to give great care in that circumstance. In fact, in 2005, we had a registered nurse, she was our member but moved up to management, testify. She was the quality assurance manager, and she testified at that point that she quit and had asked management to reinstate the nursing model and to quit mandation because she was seeing increases in falls, increases in medication errors, and even a death at that point. So we are really troubled that there have now been 3 deaths. We thought a lot of this was solved last year when the legislature and the governor appropriated $4 million in supplemental funding for nurses. The legislation did stipulate that the Veterans Home Boards were to negotiate with the unions on the hiring of these positions based on appropriate skill mix. That means the licensed professionals with the unlicensed. Because under our Nurse Practice Act, the licensed nurses do supervise the unlicensed and the LPNs. Unfortunately, that really didn't happen. We were concerned why we got that language in the law because we saw their public documents, and the public document was asking for only 1.5 FTE for an RN, even though we had had 27 nurses leave. So we didn't think it's the appropriate skill mix, and I'll have Carol speak to some of the issues that you had, Representative Eastland. We did present the Veterans Home Board with a new staffing proposal. But as I said, we're hopeful we can work with them. I think we're pretty disappointed that we see that the budget doesn't include additional staffing. We're concerned that the recommendation might be if they don't get funding, they cut that staff even further. So at this point, I'd like to hand it over to Carol Diemert and have her talk a little bit more about the actual role of the RN and its relation to quality care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair and members of the committees. My name is Carol Diemert, and I am a registered nurse and a practice specialist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. We would like to express our sincere sympathy to the family and friends also of the residents who have experienced the tragic results of incidents at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I have reviewed the survey reports from the Minnesota Department of Health. There certainly were errors of judgment and omission by nursing staff. We acknowledge that. However, the context from a nursing perspective is that the majority of the deficiencies cited were a direct result of a lack of RN staff available for assessment, planning, direct care, oversight, monitoring, and supervision of unlicensed staff. Our position has been for the past several years that the Minneapolis Veterans Home does not have an adequate number of registered nurses to care for this population. For example, from the surveys, there were multiple instances where the comprehensive skin assessments to prevent pressure ulcers and skin breakdown were not done because of time constraints. Important nursing assessment measures to reduce and prevent pressure ulcers are mobility, nutrition, hydration, medication management, pain control, and resident choice, all requiring the time and skill of an RN. Also, range of motion exercises were required to strengthen patients, which will certainly help prevent falls. But in the instances cited, the direction of performance of these exercises was not clear. And in medication errors, there were several forms in the system being used to track patient data, like allergies, which caused substantial confusion. In a study where RNs provided less than 30 minutes of direct care to each resident in a skilled care facility, the increases in pressure ulcers, urinary tract infections, weight loss, falls, and medication errors were substantial. Medication errors are much more likely to occur in situations of short staffing. The data, recent data shows that nurses experience a cognitive interruption in what they're doing every 6 minutes. So it is easy to understand that this would be exacerbated with an increased number of patients to care for. Also, the residents in the sample from the survey were at risk for skin breakdown and falls most often had multiple medical issues like Parkinson's, diabetes, congestive heart failure, chronic renal failure, and cognitive and behavioral issues. In addition to multiple medical problems, the population characteristics of the Minneapolis Veterans Homes are unique. Male patients are generally taller and heavier, which makes safe patient handling more challenging for a primarily female nursing staff. In addition to the dementia issues often associated with age, many residents come to the facility with histories of severe emotional and mental health issues, which present behavioral challenges requiring particular knowledge and skill in their management. Adequate time and appropriate skill level is required to appropriately care for this population. Intensity of needs may differ, for individuals. For example, a stable patient may require a large amount of low complexity care, which may largely be provided by non-RN staff. But another patient, such as a newly diagnosed diabetic patient with cardiac problems who also has moderate dementia, may require fewer hours of care but need the skill of an RN. So numbers and types of nursing staff make a difference. Multiple studies show that without adequate RN staffing, the incidence of infection rates, pressure ulcers, falls, and death, even death, result. In a recent study by the Institute of Medicine, a landmark report actually, on keeping patients safe, looking at the work environments of nurses, clearly documents that these increased rates of morbidity and mortality are most often system cultural failures rather than individual clinician failures. So the solution needs to be at a system organizational cultural level rather than any punitive corrective measures focused on individual frontline workers who are already struggling under the current system of staffing. Proposed strategies from the Institute of Medicine study were ensuring safe staffing levels and preventing nurse fatigue, which of course occurs with mandatory overtime. In a recent survey of the RNs at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, 50% of the registered nurses stated they never or seldom have time to adequately complete the assessment and surveillance of residents for nutritional status, cognitive function, behavior and affect, side effects of medications, and physical mobility. 65% of these same nurses state that they never or seldom have time to appropriately delegate and adequately supervise and monitor unlicensed assistive personnel and licensed practical nurses, which is required under their licensure by the Minnesota Nurse Practice Act. The registered nurses who work at the Minneapolis Veterans Home are in the untenable position of not being able to meet their legal and professional obligations under this Minnesota Nurse Practice Act. This statute outlines their obligations for assessment, developing individual plans of care, evaluating the care, and delegating and supervising unlicensed staff. We applaud Governor Pawlenty's initiative to investigate the situation and this committee. We thank you. And nurses would be eager to participate in the process. The fact remains, however, by listening to frontline caregivers earlier would have resulted in much less suffering and grief for our veterans and their families. Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Margaret Skoy. I'm a registered nurse. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for holding this House of Representatives hearing concerning the quality of care crisis at Minneapolis Veterans Home. My name is Margaret Skoy, and I have worked as a registered nurse for 21 years, the last 17 as a full-time registered nurse at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I'm a direct care staff nurse. Since the first Senate hearing held in September 2005, I have been given the opportunity to present my perspective as a registered nurse in four separate Senate hearings. These hearings have concerned the crisis in quality care at Minneapolis Veterans Home. Leading up to the first Minneapolis Veterans Home crisis in July of 2005, the Minnesota Veterans Home Registered Nurses and the Minnesota Nurses Association raised concerns about resident care and recommended solutions that were repeatedly ignored. After months of inaction, a registered nurse alerted the State Health Department about health care concerns on her unit. In July of 2005, the State Health Department cited the home with 31 violations. Soon after the violations were cited, the first Senate hearing was held. The Minneapolis Veterans Home has a capacity for 420 residents. And the residents are predominantly male. In the days of past, our nursing home residents were admitted at the beginning stages of their chronic diseases. At the present time, the acuity of our skilled nursing care residents has dramatically risen. They are admitted with multiple diagnoses, both mental and medical. For example, profiles of our residents in the skilled nursing care units at the Minneapolis Veterans Home include the following: an elderly, incontinent, blind, insulin-dependent diabetic with Alzheimer's disease. A second profile: an elderly, end-stage Parkinson's resident unable to communicate, to feed, toilet, or reposition himself. A third and final profile: an elderly, incontinent, insulin-dependent resident with post-traumatic stress disorder and a hemiplegic. Today, I am here to inform you that we do not have adequate staff to meet the needs of our residents. A critical lack of direct care registered nurses and nurses' aides continues to exist at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The latest State Health Department survey of November 2006 cited 34 violations. 1.5 years after the first Senate hearing, we need to address this question. What changes have actually taken place? Number one, a very minimal increase in the number of nurses' aides. Number two, no increase in the number of direct care registered nurses.
the Minneapolis Veterans Home Registered Nurses and the Minnesota Nurses Association recommend hiring a charge nurse for each unit. Whose responsibility would be to monitor the care on the units through audits, be directly involved in care planning for the residents, and follow up on the needs of our residents? A significant result of the September 21, 2005 Senate hearing with Linda Berglund was that on June 2, 2006, the Minnesota legislature appropriated $4 million to increase nursing staff at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. From listening to the Veterans Home Board budget reports in a past Senate hearing, the money has already been spent. Only a small proportion to increase nurses' aides and no money allocated for direct care registered nurses. We respectfully ask you to pressure the Minnesota Veterans Home Board to improve the quality of care of our residents by increasing the number of nurses' aides and direct care registered nurses. Thank you for holding this hearing.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for... My name is Paul Tyne. I've been an RN at the Vets Home for the last 10 years, and I'm the chair of our M&A bargaining unit. Thank you for your interest and for holding this hearing. Pointing fingers is not constructive. In order to address the many serious problems on our campus, all involved parties will need to be transparent and solution-oriented. Since the negative Minnesota Department of Health survey in 2005, the focus has been on corrections of the survey deficiencies, which is understandable. But before scrambling in all different directions, we should try to identify the sources of our problems. One glaring problem has been the monitoring of our units. On January 31, 2001, the RN senior, aka charge nurse, position was eliminated. Since that time, no accommodations have ever been made to pick up those vital responsibilities of education, evaluation, training, and ongoing audit. The RN senior was a watchdog for all the nursing care units. We can trace the decline of care to the removal of this position. Budget restraints have always been cited when this has been pointed out to all the different administrations we've had since then. Our nurses are working extremely hard to care for this challenging population of veterans. When nurses are not allowed to give their professional input and feel they do not have the resources or ability to render good care, their morale falls and they leave. The use of mandatory overtime has made recruiting and retaining quality nursing staff an uphill battle. The money that is required to get a nursing employee up and running is quite steep, and then to not retain them is unacceptable. Our home has suffered enormous losses with the departure of high-quality nurses and nursing leaders who have become disillusioned and departed. Those of us who do remain do so because of the relationships we've made with the veteran residents and their families. For myself, the expectation from these relationships can be very troubling when I go home at the end of the day and feel like once again I wasn't able to get it all done. The sheer volume of medication to be dispensed, treatments to be performed, and documentation that must be completed is daunting. We continue to have unfilled RN positions and an overwhelming morale problem secondary to our frontline nursing staff not being set up for success with the current staffing ratios. I would like to acknowledge the positive dialogue we enjoyed yesterday with the Executive Director, Chip Cox. We look forward to more discussion as we are all aware that a unified approach is truly essential to improve the care of our veterans. We respectfully request your assistance for more RNs, LPNs, and HSTs to provide these veterans with the care they rightfully deserve. Thanks again. I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. For this panel, we have Representative Rubin and Representative Kranz. Representative Rude?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your dedicated service as an RN. I have a great appreciation for it, and have myself worked in situations where colleagues will make the comment when they're going home, I hope I didn't kill anybody tonight, because the staffing conditions are so adverse. You mentioned something that was shocking to me, that the charge nurse position was eliminated, and as somebody who, I don't work in a hospital anymore, but they were kind of like the leader of the unit and really helpful. I'm wondering, how have you managed that? I mean, is there a report anymore? There's previous comments made. It sounded like the staff does not report off each shift, or does that happen? And has that been a deterioration of the procedures that we're hearing about with the changeover in the management? And if you can just speak a little bit to more how that has changed over the years.
It was before 2005, before we got our that first survey, which we were all just really very upset about. Before that time, we had on each unit what was called a nurse senior, which is AKA for a charge nurse. That nurse was responsible for making sure through auditing that we had quality care. She would be directly involved with following up on cares of residents and the needs of residents, and they were around checking to make sure we were all doing our jobs and doing them well. Due to budgetary cuts, they cut those 9 nurses out of employment. So right now what we have is we have a supervisor, and then we have 4 nurses, and we have our HSTs. The work that they were delegated to do was never incorporated anywhere. So we are, as we can see through our surveys, they're very missed and very needed.
Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And I would just say that clearly this is a very big problem that all of us in the room, I think, are concerned about. But what's stunning to me is it's not rocket science either.
No.
I mean, there are a number of things that are out there that seem to be pretty easy to fix, but we're going to have to be willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And quality care has to be. So, thank you again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Representative Krantz and then Representative Fitz.
Thanks, Madam Chair. To any of the testifiers, I have one question and maybe some. I'm requesting some information because we heard from the department, and we're hearing from you, and I'm curious. While I think we could argue that our veterans deserve the best care, the Cadillac program out there, we also understand that we have budget constraints and whatnot to work with. But I'm curious, there's been a lot of talk on ratios, and as a high school teacher, I equate that to class size. I'm curious if you can give me an idea of, based on your experience, because I think we heard testimony that the ratio might be 1 to 10 residents, and you named off 3. I'm like, wow, if there's 7 more in that same category, that's an awful lot of work. So I'm wondering if you can provide me at some point in time information about what the ratios should be and what the dollar amount estimation, what that would be to provide at least adequate care for these residents. And you may not have that now. I understand that, and you can provide that to me, but I know we're short on time. But I'm curious if we have documentation from your organization as far as what those ratios should be, taking into account the facility. You know, Minneapolis and Hastings, probably not the same ratios. But and what I mean, we've heard like 4 million. Well, that's a favorable outlook.
Yeah.
Well, I would probably assume that you'd differ with that.
There are recommended. The nursing home doesn't often have a strict ratio. Like hospitals, there's often, you know, ratios. There's data that shows in acute care that every patient that a nurse is added over 4 in a medical surgical unit increases the mortality rate by 7%. Now, in nursing homes, how it's done is it's per patient, the time per patient. So, for example, the standards that are recommended for RNs is 0.75 hour, I mean 3/4 of an hour per resident,
per shift, per 8-hour day. So it's figured, it's configured a little bit differently, and there's also a ratio for unlicensed for nursing assistants, which I believe is around 2 hours, and then there's also one for LPNs, and I can get that to you. That is the recommended standard. So it's not really a strict ratio, and it's so diverse and disparate because of the different kinds of units and the different kinds of patients, and even the data is now showing that we really have to look at intensity. You can't look just at patient population. It's one patient can have multiple diagnoses and require less time, or, you know, vice versa. So I think, honestly, the nursing profession is not real good at trying to measure all that. The hospitals are having difficulty also, but there is a recommended standard for number of hours per patient day by different skill mixes. I can get that to you.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up. I appreciate that, and I think we always try to look toward some standard, mm-hmm. but I think management is going to have their idea of number of FTEs that right. they need to, right. to do a adequate care in a facility, and I think labor also has their ideas, right. and so I'm looking for these extremes and trying to yeah. see in the spirit of negotiations if we can't move at least the middle to something that's more reasonable.
No, I understand that, and I just one thing about community standard and benchmarking is I think it's fair to say that except for probably some major few facilities, long-term care is underfunded and understaffed across the board. So, you know, it's sort of like difficult to compare, but we are working on it.
Madam Chair, I look forward to seeing that data. Thank you.
Okay, for this panel, I have Representative Stritz and Representative Severson, and then we have a resident who wants to testify after that.
Well, on that point, Madam Chair, on the ratio, I was, you know, concerned about that as well, because in the nursing home where I worked, there was a ratio, and it's per hours, and we had the case mix, the A through K, and, you know, we like to make our K's look like A's or, you know, whatever, but and give the excellent nursing care to those folks. But what's happened in the nursing home industry and in your industry as well is the acuity. You know, these residents are presenting at the end stages of all of these diseases, heart, diabetic, renal failure, you name it, alcoholism, behavioral. So, you know, I think that's a huge piece of this. And I just want to make the point about time. Time. When you have an elderly resident who can't chew the meat and you have to take it back and get ground meat and he can't swallow the ground meat, then you have to take it back and get pureed meat. That's a time-consuming piece of that, and time is money in this industry. So I think we need to take a look at that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is kind of an open question, too, to any of the testifiers. There, you know, I had heard in committee, we had this in a Veterans Affairs Committee on a lunch issue that Representative Dominguez had brought forward. And it kind of concerned me at that point that we had some overtime that was being pronounced, let's say. And I'm just kind of curious as to, is the overtime scheduled in because of a lack of a shortage of staff, or is it because people are calling in sick? Is it a combination of the two? And can you give me some kind of numbers on what percentage of the nursing staff is actually doing overtime in terms of the percentage of their weekly process?
Madam Chair, Representative, in the contract, mandatory overtime, you're supposed to, if we had an emergency, a snowstorm or something where, you know, it's a 24-hour facility, you need to have people there. So our perception, it's been used as a staffing technique to fill chronic unfilled positions. It's recently gotten better, but it's still, I don't have figures for you as far as what ratio, how many percentage of people are getting mandated, but it's a real impairment to trying to recruit or retain staff when they're forced to work overtime and subject to discipline if they don't comply with that.
I follow, Madam Chair.
Mr. Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think we heard mentioned that there was an additional $4 million that came in last year into the budget, and you commented that there was no increase in staffing as a result of that increase in revenue?
We saw nursing assistants come up, but still, that our perception is 5 HSTs to care for 50 residents is inadequate. That's a group of 10. So,
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I would just, if I could just continue, when that $4 million was handed over to the Veterans Home, it was stipulated that the Veterans Home Board would confer, meet with the nurses, the registered nurses, and the Minnesota Nurses Association, excuse me, and that we would collaborate with them how that money was to be spent. We had one meeting. There were only two board members there. And at that time, we realized that the money had already been spent. So it was a real disappointment for us.
Ms. Gay, can you clarify that last statement? You realized the money had already been spent? And
well, one of our Minnesota Nurses Association member was there, and at the end, we just had this feeling that it was not, that we were there and the money had already been spent on various things that they may have needed. And so she asked, do you have money? And they did not answer that question.
I think it would be very interesting, maybe when we get the board back up here, it would be interesting, maybe you can prepare to answer that question. I think that is a question that at least I and I think others have, like what, where was the money, where did it go, the money that's, that apparently was allocated to increase nursing staff and other staff, and how was it spent?
And Madam Chair, to that point, I think if that was on the base, if that was a $4 million that went on the base, or if that was one-time monies, you could use that to target whether or not there was a market improvement in the whole situation, or if there's more money needed. I think it's kind of one of those issues that we need to take a hard look at what did happen to those monies, and was there potential for improvement?
Okay. I want to give time for a couple of other witnesses who have come today. Mr. Dobish, who's a resident, I believe. Thank you, panel, very much. The last person that I have to testify after Mr. Dobish is Joan Wilshire from the Minnesota State Council on Disability. And then we'll ask the board to come back up. Representative Schumper.
Madam Chair, I did a little numbers here for the last hour, and if you look at fiscal year 07 and 08 and look at the budgets, in fiscal year 07, which they're just finishing right now, there was about $78,000 spent per bed in the veterans home system. And in fiscal year 08, it would come to, which is what we're going to be starting July 1st, it'll come to about $90,000 per bed. If that has any significance, I don't know, but I don't know what private nursing home is like or what, but
would you give those two numbers again?
Yeah, for fiscal year 07, it was around $78,000 per bed, and in fiscal year 08, it'd be around $90,000 per bed.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dobish.
Madam and Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I would like to reserve the right to testify after Joan Wilshire testifies, because I believe she has a valid point to bring. Not that I don't,
okay.
But in the interest of picking up the tempo and
that's fine. Is Ms. Wilshire here? There you go. Okay. Come on up to the microphone, please. You can just maybe move over to the other chair, Mr. Dobish. Just introduce yourself, please.
Yep. Good afternoon. My name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability, which is one of your advisory state agencies to the governor, legislature, state agencies, and to the disability community. I'm here today not only representing the disability community, but I'm also the niece of one of the persons who has died at the VA home in January of this year, whose medical care is now being investigated by the Minnesota Department of Health because of the allegations of neglect. And I have photos here today so we can put an actual face with the person that we're talking about. That's the large family, and the interesting thing, that's only half the family there. That's how large the family is, and he is sitting in the front row there. And then there's a short, little smaller picture here that will look really good as well here. So there we go, with the wonderful veteran's cap that he has on and the top there, the red hat. So there is my uncle, Harlan. On January 4th, my uncle died at the Minnesota VA home. This was after living there for 1 year. My cousins informed the family that he passed away in his sleep peacefully. His family was grateful that he did not suffer. A few weeks later, the family was informed of the investigation by the Minnesota Department of Health. They were shocked to learn of the investigation. After reading the investigative report from the Health Department, I want to outline to you some key issues that need to be brought to your attention about my uncle's medical care that he received that night he died. He had been experiencing hypoglycemia as a result of his diabetes. Prior to his death, he was experiencing hypoglycemia for nearly 30 hours. However, that night he died, several health care protocols were not performed that should have been, including CPR. The first one I want to discuss is that the nurses did not check the protocol for hypoglycemia. These actions might have actually saved his life had they actually done this. Two, it states in his chart that the doctor was to be notified immediately when his blood sugar level changed and was declining. This was not done. An RN was not called, nor the physician, to inform them of this change in my uncle's health care that evening, nor were they called 3 days prior when he was experiencing this hypoglycemia, when his blood sugar level was dropping. Three, at the shift changes, the staff did not discuss his hypoglycemia issues that he was having. Why would the nurses not have discussed this to make continuity and consistency of his health care better? Four, currently, there are no means at the bedside to identify whether a resident is full code. Why not? Patients should have it noted in ready sight if they are DNR or if they are full code. My uncle did not have a DNR on his chart as he was listed as full code per his advanced health care directive. Five, the resident's medical record is located a considerable distance from the patient's room. Why is that? Perhaps the medical records need to be located closer in proximity to the patient so the medical staff can look at the chart to determine what treatment is needed and required. Had they actually read his chart, they would have been familiar with the fact that he was not a DNR, but full code. And six, consistency and honesty in communication needs to occur regarding all deaths that result at the VA home. Our family should not have found out about how he actually died through the Minnesota Department of Health investigative report. When the medical staff finally realized that my uncle's blood sugar level was not responding to the medical treatment they were giving him, they then actually tried to have him drink an oral substance to raise his blood sugar level. At this point, it was too late. He was nearly in a comatose state and could have choked to death just trying to drink the substance to raise his blood sugar level. According to the investigative report, he started to sweat, he slumped over, and stopped breathing. They did not perform CPR, nor did they call 911. That is correct. They did not perform CPR or call 911. As I said earlier, he did not have a DNR on his chart. He was listed as full code. As a person with a disability, one of the most feared issues we live with is that the medical professionals will not follow the healthcare directives that we have written for ourselves. Currently, the healthcare system is urging all people with and without disabilities to write their healthcare directives so you as an individual will have your wishes known on how you want to be treated in the end-life situations. What good is this piece of paper going to be if the medical professionals are not even going to abide by it? We applaud the governor for taking prompt action and the Minnesota Department of Health for finding the VA home on these issues. I urge the legislature to take the same prompt action. Recommendations our family would suggest are, One, more oversight of how health care is being delivered at the VA home. Two, accountability needs to be included in the oversight. This case needs to be reviewed by the Board of Nursing for review of the individual nurses involved in the investigation. At least five nurses failed to monitor my uncle's worsening condition that night. When the investigators asked the nursing staff to respond to the investigation, none of them responded. Three, more RNs need to be hired because it is obvious that the current mix of medical staff is not capable of handling monitoring of simple blood sugar levels appropriately. Four, better training of staff on issues regarding diabetes and knowledge of full code and DNR issues needs to happen. And five, more honesty and communication needs to be handled in terms of disclosure of how deaths actually result in the VA home. Our only agenda here today is that we look to change the healthcare system so this can not happen to another veteran, or for that matter, anyone who can be victimized by the medical system. Their dad, my uncle, just absolutely loved it there at the VA home. He may not have loved the food, but he did love the environment there, played cards with a variety of people, and really enjoyed life there. He was thriving. He was doing very, very well. Our veterans should be treated with respect and dignity. After all, he was a veteran, he was a father, he was a husband, he was a friend, and he was my uncle. He deserved better. So I ask you, the House, and I just spoke with the Senate this morning, I urge you folks to get together and fix this problem. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Okay, Mr. Dobish, why don't you come up and join her, and then we're going to ask the board and administrators to come back to the table. Okay. We have maybe about 10 minutes, so if you can take about a couple of minutes, Mr. Dobish, we appreciate that. And I guess we have to be out of this room at 2:30, so... And I know some members have had to go to other meetings, so I just want to let you know there's no lack of interest here, but people are heading off to other meetings.
Okay. I hope this dialogue among the key players in this. Well, Madam and Mr. Chairman and representatives, my name is Todd Dobish, and I'm a resident, 17-year resident of the Minnesota Veterans Home. I'll be 45 on the 25th of this month, and I was admitted on April the 9th of 1990. I gave a spirited speech at the Senate and had a very wonderful lunch in your cafeteria.
Good.
And I've been up since about 3 o'clock this morning trying to get back to sleep.
You're doing okay. You're
doing fine.
We're glad you're here.
I'd like to say that with the augmentation of the long-term care council, which asked me declared in another survey that this survey be different, that this survey be like the rules writing committee of the early 1990s from 89 to 92. When residents were given line item veto of the 9050, which most of the state code, chapter 9050 of the state code, which you all know governs the Minnesota Veterans Home, as you can probably imagine, there's a little bit of my blood in that ink, and I'm very proud of the progress that the outside agencies, the home board, and the Minnesota veterans, and the residents made to accomplish that daunting feat in less than 2 years. After 120 years of ad hoc rules written on a napkin and dispensed at will, I see this cropping up again. I see the day-to-day lives of the Minnesota veteran, who the Minnesota veteran's home, I should say, because they're a different demographic than the Minnesota veteran. Most of them are down and out. Most of them are down and out, and looking for another chance, or are looking for another chance, and they should be represented. They should have a voice in their care. I believe that two ways of doing that is to have a resident staff position on the Veterans Home Board, and a resident staff position on the long-term care commission, and its report with line item veto. That may seem like a lot, but when you consider that we're 95% of the cause, I think it's only fair that we be at least 95% of the cure.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dolbish, do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Go ahead.
Representative Severson, who's got a little more experience than I, mentioned that you have a pin, and I believe, is that a paratrooper pin on your sweater?
Yes, it is.
And can I ask what branch of service you served in to earn that?
I was in the Army Airborne for a year and a half.
Wow, that's really cool. My dad was an Airborne Ranger. So you served in the late 80s, would that be right?
I served in the middle 80s.
Oh, cool. Good for you. I want to thank you for your service. And is there, in particular, have you had, do you like working with both, do you get along well with the nurses that you work with the aides? And how about, do you have, in our own Hastings Veterans Home, I notice when the vets walk in the halls, whether they run into an administrator or a custodian, there's a good exchange there, and you feel like you can talk to any one of them. Do you feel that way at the Minneapolis home?
Mr. Dobish?
No, I don't. When I first got there in 1989, it wasn't uncommon for staff and residents to interact in a family manner, in a familiar manner, in a cordial manner, whether it be the janitor, or whether it be the chief administrator, I'd like to qualify that answer by saying that this is changing now, and that with the inclusion of Bob Wicken, who you probably all realize was disbanded from the Minnesota Veterans Home unceremoniously, and I think very, very scathingly. I believe that the current administration has my vote of confidence, but I'd also like to qualify that by saying that I believe the middle management of the Minnesota Veterans Home and certain key players are withholding their best or don't feel challenged enough by their great responsibility to serve the Minnesota veterans in their day-to-day needs. I have particular disdain for the voodoo financing, voodoo financing of the finance department, where a veteran is not forewarned about incurrent costs before they're admitted, and that when an expenditure is an expenditure on their books, it's only on their books, and it's not put into the pocket of the Minnesota veteran.
Thank you.
just like I expect my income to be counted as income, I expect my Medicare premium, which is my own expenditure, to be counted as the Minnesota state statute garners me the right to receive compensation for it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Dolvish.
I've in the past the finance department has handed my social worker pencil written documents that I was supposed to sign in ink, and when I confronted the social worker about that, he said that it was not up to him to do that, or to it was not his responsibility to watch out for my rights. It was given to him by the finance department, and he had better do it.
Okay. So, Dovish, I want to thank you for your testimony. We're out of time. I think there was a comment from Representative Liebling. Did you want to make a final comment? And then we're going to we'll be closing this in a minute. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say to Ms. Wilshire, on our behalf of all of us, I just wanted to offer her our condolences on the loss of her uncle. And thank you very much for sharing that with us and making it very personal for us that, you know, we're talking about real human beings here, somebody's dad, somebody's uncle, you know, somebody's spouse. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and I want to. I'm sorry, we're really out of time.
I do need to mention that a key player in our welfare is the Ombudsman's Office.
Okay.
And that there is a bill before the Senate called SF number 1127. I have a copy of it right here, and if the House would be so inclined to have a companion bill presented for maybe additional funding or a more inclusive document, I would appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Why don't you leave that with us, and we'll take a look at it. Members, obviously we ran out of time, and we didn't get to hear back from the Veterans Home Board, and I guess we're just conferring with Representative Huntley here. And I think we definitely want you back so that you can respond to some of these questions. And there were several members, I know, I apologize, we couldn't get everybody's questions from the membership asked today. So I'll be working with my staff, and we will schedule a time for you to come back, at least to the Public Health Committee. And whoever from Representative Huntley's committee is interested, we'll let you know about it. It might be hard to actually have an official meeting, joint meeting with you. So for today, we're going to be adjourned, but we have a lot more work to do. Representative Tinglestone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your invitation to the Veterans Affairs Committee, too. I know there were several
Absolutely.
Of us here, and if you have another one, please invite us again.
We will make sure that you're notified. Thank you, members. Unfortunately, the room is going to be used by another committee, so the meeting is adjourned.